There is no place in the human diet for artificial sweeteners. And corollary to that, there are no harms to eating non-processed forms of sugars. I feel like a beast. Check out this review on Whole Package from Heart and Soil Supplements. That is our desiccated testicle containing supplement. I'm a 27-year-old male, just got done battling a bad case of COVID, been trying an animal-based diet recently, decided to give Whole Package a try because my body just hasn't bounced back from being sick. Within 3 days of taking this, felt like I was in high school again. The drive to just get up and seize the day is absolutely crazy. I would love to test my testosterone levels, see where they are at after a month. Desiccated testicle, raw testicle, testicle's powerful. If you guys saw my reel on Instagram or my YouTube video, you know that this supplement contains bioactive testosterone. We had all of our supplements tested for informed sports testing and they all passed except Whole Package because it has testosterone and other testosterone metabolites in it. So if you're a professional athlete, Whole Package, don't do this one if you're going to be drug tested. If you're not going to be drug tested, this supplement contains testosterone in testicles, something our ancestors would have been eating for hundreds of thousands of years. It supports the formation of testosterone in the human body. It's a pretty incredible thing. The reviews on this one are out of this world. It also contains blood and liver, which I think also will support the formation of testosterone because things like zinc and copper and other nutrients, vitamin A, choline, these are all essential for optimal testosterone. So really, any of our desiccated organ supplements, any organs will help with the formation of testosterone, but especially Whole Package for those of you guys out there who are looking for a little boast. You can find it at heartandsoil.co. It's where all of our supplements are. And you can join us this month for Animal Base 30, our free 30-day Animal Base Challenge, animalbase30.com. In this week's podcast, I wanted to talk about artificial sweeteners, things like stevia, Splenda, sucralose, Ace K, aspartame, or saccharin. Many of you are consuming these either in low-carb products or keto products or electrolyte or zero-carb flavored drink mixes, and I have some concerns about them. So I wanted to talk about in this podcast why I am concerned about these artificial sweeteners. In short, they appear to disrupt the gut microbiome, quorum sensing, which is communication between organisms in the gut. They appear to impair glucose tolerance in humans and in lab animals, especially things like sucralose, but all of them do in multiple papers that I will show you in this podcast. And at the beginning of the podcast, I will make a case that you should not fear sugar in things like fruit and honey and maple syrup or even lactose in raw milk. And I will provide some important evidence showing that sugar carbohydrates are beneficial for many of you, all of you in those settings. I don't see any reason to have artificial sweeteners in your diet, even if you're obese and diabetic. I'm going to get into all that in this podcast. So enjoy this one, guys. Let me know what you want to see in the comments if you're watching this on YouTube. And thank you to my sponsors who make this podcast possible. I want to start out by giving a shout out to my friends at Zero Acre. You guys may have seen the podcast I did with Tucker Goodrich and Jeff Knobs. Jeff Knobs is connected with Zero Acre. Jeff Knobs is a friend of mine, and this company's pretty cool. In that podcast, we talked a lot about the problems with seed oils. You guys have heard me talk about this all the time. Omega-6, linoleic acid-laden seed oils. And a lot of you guys always ask me, what about olive oil? What about avocado oil? Well, I'm not a huge fan of those either because a lot of them are cut with seed oils, and they contain between 8 and 20% linoleic acid. I really think that the key to getting healthy is getting the lowest amount of linoleic acid in your diet. And I know that many of you want an oil that is liquid that you can put on foods. Maybe you still eat salad. Okay, fine. I'm not a huge fan of that. But Zero Acre has a pretty amazing solution. And we talked about it in that podcast, but I want to tell you about what they're doing. They have a cultured oil, which means they're able to make their own oil with very low amounts of linoleic acid. It's almost all a monounsaturated fat. It's almost all oleic acid, which is the main fat found in olive oil. And the amount of linoleic acid is on the order of butter, tallow, and ghee. Those are the ones I really like because they're so low in linoleic acid. So I really hope that you will check out Zero Acre and what they're doing. You can find them at Zero Acre, ZeroAcre.com. You can use the /Paul or the code Paul at checkout to get free shipping on your first order. I think Zero Acre is going to be great if you want to put a liquid oil on your salad. Again, I'm not a huge fan of salads, but if you want to do it, do that. And I hope that Zero Acre cultured oils show up in fryers and restaurants and get rid of the seed oils as much as possible. So if you're looking for a low linoleic acid cooking oil, has this high smoke point, 485 degrees, very low linoleic acid, much lower linoleic acid cooking oil than olive or avocado. Check them out at Zero Acre. It's gluten-free, glyphosate residue-free, allergen-friendly, Whole30 approved, animal-based 30 approved, and they're offering free shipping on your first order, zeroacre.com/Paul. And it comes in a recyclable aluminum packaging, which completely blocks the UV light, which will prevent oxidation. So many of these oils you're going to get are in glass or plastic that's going to let light through. So significantly lower amounts of linoleic acid. Check out what they're doing. And at Zero Acre, they have an incredible blog. They have some amazing blogs looking at seed oils and the problems there. So you'll find a lot at zeroacre.com. And if you want to check out their oils, you can use the code Paul for free shipping on your first order. But I love what they're doing and I appreciate their mission big time. Also want to talk about 8Sleep. You can go to 8sleep.com/carnivoremd to check out the Pod Pro cover to get a cooling mattress, save $150 at checkout. They currently ship to the USA, Canada, and the UK. You guys know good sleep is the biggest game changer. I mean, you can do a couple of things in your life to really level up, eat liver, get in the sun, surf, get in the ocean, fall in love, you know, have a good community and getting good sleep. I mean, these are the hugest movers, I think. So it's nature's best medicine. And a lot of Americans struggle with sleep. I think temperature is a huge problem with this. So many mattresses I've slept on in the past make me hot in the middle of the night. But I really like the Pod Pro cover from 8Sleep. It's the most advanced solution on the market for thermoregulation. It pairs dynamic cooling and heating with biometric tracking. You can sleep as cool as 55, which would mean that you're an absolute furnace, or as hot as 110, you'd have to be in Antarctica to do that, but you can do it. Temperature of the cover adjusts on each side. 8Sleep users fall asleep 32% faster, reduce sleep interruptions by 40%, get overall more restful sleep. I love it when I'm back in Austin and I can sleep on my Pod Pro cover from 8Sleep. Go to 8sleep.com/carnivoremd to check out the Pod Pro cover. Save $150 at checkout. They currently ship in the USA, Canada, and the UK. Also, I'm going to give a shout out to my friends at MarekHealth.com. You've heard me talk about them. M-A-R-E-K Health.com. You can use the code Paul for 10% off your first labs. And I just designed a custom panel with Merrick Health, and you can find that through them. It'll be my Paul Saladino's panel. We tried to make it very affordable. So what I did with this panel at Merrick is I made it specific. I wanted to do the most bang for your buck. A lot of the panels that I show on here are my comprehensive panels, and Merrick will help you with that if you want to do a full comprehensive panel. It's a little more expensive, but this one is affordable, and you can get 10% off your first lab using the code Paul. And it's the most important things I think you need to check in your blood work. So I love Merrick. They're co-owned by Derek from More Plates, More Dates. He's a friend of mine. I think knowing your hormones, knowing your blood work is the first step to changing. You guys have seen my blood work analysis. I did the last couple through Merrick, and I really appreciate what they're doing. So go to MerrickHealth.com/fundamental health. That's the name of this podcast. You can order a comprehensive or order Paul's panel, get 10% off with the code Paul. You can add the lab analysis to have the results reviewed, over-the-counter supplementation recommendations, MerrickHealth.com/fundamental health. Use the code Paul at checkout, or you can order your own desired labs or do my custom panel, which is pretty affordable. It's the most bang for your buck, 10% off your first lab order at MerrickHealth.com. Last but not least, got to give a shout out to my friends at BonCharge, BonCharge.com. You can get 15% off using the code CarnivoreMD. And right now I'm doing this podcast with a laptop on my desk, and this laptop is on an EMF blocking mat from BonCharge. And when I'm on my computer or on my phone, I've got EMF blocking, reducing earbuds in my ear. I don't like AirPods because there's a lot of Bluetooth radiation from those. So I like the wired headphones, and BonCharge makes a good pair of those as well. So I think that we're going to be learning more about EMF in the coming years, and I am concerned about this. So at night, I turn off my router. I don't let my friends or my family put laptops on their lap. I buy them all EMF reducing pads, these EMF blocking pads to put their computers on. You should buy these for your family. I think it's a great gift. And I love the ear pods as well. Yeah, BonCharge also does blue blocking glasses. They have all kinds of good stuff. Check them out, BonCharge.com. You can get 15% off your order by using the code CarnivoreMD. On to the podcast. Artificial sweeteners, things like sucralose, which is known as Splenda, aspartame, ACE-K, saccharin, Are these good to have in your diet or not good to have in your diet? That's what I'm going to talk about on this week's podcast. There's some really interesting data that I've been digging into about the harms of artificial sweeteners. Right off the top of our heads, most people will think artificial sweeteners are probably great because they don't have any calories and sugar is bad for us, right? Well, it's more complicated than that. And if the idea that it's more complicated than that seems wild to you, I recommend that you go back and listen to the podcast that I did with Georgie Dinkov from a few weeks ago, where we talked about differences between high fructose corn syrup and sucrose, which is a disaccharide of glucose and fructose. The short of that conversation was that high fructose corn syrup appears to be 4 to 5 times more caloric than what's listed on the label, meaning that there are hidden starches, probably hidden oligosaccharides in the high fructose corn syrup that Georgie believes, and I think this is a good theory, are probably causing gut inflammation and immune reactions in humans, and according to mass spec analysis, have 4 to 5 times more calories than what you would expect based on the grams of high fructose corn syrup listed on the label. So I think that a lot of research with sugar looks bad because they're using high fructose corn syrup. But as I spoke about with Georgie, when you look at research using things like fruit, honey, maple syrup, low processed or non-processed sources of quote sugar, it doesn't look that bad. In fact, it doesn't look bad at all. So in this podcast, I am going to make a case for the fact that you should not be using artificial sweeteners in your diet in any way, shape, or form because they will mess up your insulin sensitivity and your glucose tolerance and change your appetite and change your gut flora. And then it's much better just to eat a form of a non-processed sugar, be that maple syrup, be that lactose in raw milk, be that fruit, be that honey. All of these, I think, are totally benign and even beneficial sources of carbohydrates for humans. And I will make that case in this podcast as well, showing you that in athletes who are doing exhaustive exercise, having carbohydrates in the diet is very helpful. And if you restrict your carbohydrates, your thyroid will suffer, your immune system will suffer. We know that your hormones overall will suffer. Yes, this means that if you're doing keto, all of those things are suffering. So at the outset of the podcast, I wanted to ask myself, why would anyone use an artificial sweetener? And I think the two reasons I could come up with were, you believe that sugar is bad for you, and I think you should do more research into that if you still believe that, and you can see the differences between high fructose corn syrup and things like fruit, honey, maple syrup, et cetera. And number two, you might be diabetic. How could I possibly suggest that things like fruit or honey or maple syrup could be good for diabetics? Shouldn't they be using artificial sweeteners? And my answer is still a resounding no. They should not be using artificial sweeteners. The amount of carbohydrates in their diet could be lower than yours or mine, depending on your activity level. But I still think it's fine for diabetics to get fruit, honey, maple syrup in their diets because artificial sweeteners are going to worsen diabetics' insulin sensitivity in the long run. I'm going to show you all that data in this podcast. So let's go ahead and jump in. I want to start with diabetics because I think this is really the sharp end of the spear. And this is where people are going to get most hung up. So consider this, guys. When you are diabetic, the diagnosis is made with a fasting blood glucose, a fasting blood glucose of 126 or more, diagnoses you as diabetic. There's no real criteria for what your fasting insulin should be to be diabetic. And I think this is where we've gone wrong. But nevertheless, fasting blood glucose is a reasonable metric. It's a reasonable proxy for your insulin sensitivity. Diabetes is a disease of insulin resistance. That is a really important point to understand. That first and foremost, diabetes is a disease of insulin resistance. And because you are insulin resistant, your blood sugar goes up. I think that all too often in nutritional circles, people conflate blood sugar with diabetes or conflate blood sugar with a cause of diabetes because blood sugar goes up as a result of diabetes. But your blood glucose is not coming from the foods you eat in diabetes. The blood glucose is mostly coming from inappropriate gluconeogenesis at the level of the liver because you are insulin resistant. Remember that. So the crux, the center of your diabetes is not that you're eating too much sugar. I promise you that. It is that you are insulin resistant and your liver is making too much blood glucose for your body. So with that in mind, and I will show you some really interesting articles here in a moment, I would say diabetics don't need to completely avoid honey, fruit, maple syrup as sources of carbohydrates in their diet. If you guys have followed any of the things that I've done in the past, you know that I'm not a huge fan of other sources of carbohydrates like grains or beans or other starches like root vegetables, things like this, because of the anti-nutrients they contain. I'm not going to go into that in this podcast. So I feel strongly that the most easily digestible sources of carbohydrates for humans are simple sugars that are low in starch, that are low in fiber, things like fruit, honey, maple syrup, et cetera, lactose, and dairy. That's where I get the majority of my carbohydrates. And interestingly, this is something that I've aligned with the Repeat community on. Georgie and I talked about that a few weeks ago. And I think that there's good evidence that I will talk with Georgie about in an upcoming podcast that starches, grains, these high fibrous forms of carbohydrates actually are inflammatory to the gut. We see that, and that's a problem for humans. So where should you get your carbohydrates? I think fruit, honey, maple syrup, raw dairy, these are great places to get your carbohydrates from. So I know that many of you are kind of doing this and your brain is exploding right now, but bear with me. I want to show you some really interesting research in this and challenge you to think for yourself. As always, don't accept anything I'm saying as fact, question all of it, do your own research, but think for yourself. Even if I'm just getting you curious about this idea, I think it will result in better health for you. So let's talk about diabetics and honey specifically as a model of this diabetes and sugar suggestion that I'm making, and we'll move from there. But this is all framed in the conversation of artificial sweeteners, good or bad. I'm going to show you lots of interesting evidence in humans and animal studies in this podcast showing that they're harmful for you in many ways, including worsening your insulin sensitivity. So I don't think anyone should be eating these, even people who are diabetic. Definitely, if you're not diabetic, there is zero reason to have any artificial sweeteners in your diet. So the first paper I want to show you guys is this one. It's an 8-week randomized controlled clinical trial done in 2009 looking at the effects of natural honey consumption in diabetic patients. These are humans, all right? This is 48 type 2 diabetic patients who were put into two groups. They received oral natural honey for 8 weeks and the control group that did not take honey. So that is the only intervention. They gave these people honey and no honey. How much did they give them? You can see here in the experimental design, the first 2 weeks, they got 1 gram per kilogram per day of honey. The second 2 weeks, 1.5 grams per kilogram per day. The third 2 weeks, 2 grams per kilogram per day. And the last 2 weeks, 2.5 kilograms per day. 2.5 grams per kilogram per day. So I'm about 70 kilograms, 75 kilograms, about 165, 170 pounds. So at the end of this study, somebody who's like me, 5'9", moderately muscular, probably would have different body composition as a diabetic, but 170 pound person would be getting around 170 plus grams of honey per day at the end of the study. That's a lot of honey. 170 grams of honey. That's 10, 11 tablespoons of honey per day these diabetics were getting at the end of the study in the last 2 weeks. At the beginning of the study, a 70 kilogram diabetic is going to get 70 grams of honey. Then they're going to get 105 grams of honey. Then they're going to get 140 grams of honey per day. And then at the end, they're going to get 175 grams of honey per day, 70 kilogram human. So a lot of honey being given to these people over 8 weeks. Now, I want to show you guys the results of the study. What these researchers found was that insulin sensitivity improved and lipids improved in the honey group. Now, blood sugars went up. I'll show you this in a moment. Hemoglobin A1C went up, but fasting blood glucose, the best metric of insulin sensitivity, went down in these diabetics. This was the only intervention they did. These people didn't get rid of seed oils. They didn't get rid of anything else that I think is a problem for diabetics. They could have done this study way better if you actually wanted to reverse these people's diabetes, give them an animal-based diet, give them meat, give them organs, give them raw dairy, get them into Animal-Based 30, which is happening now. Go to animalbased30.com to sign up and join us at Heart and Soil if you want to do Animal-Based 30. It's a free 30-day animal-based eating challenge. We've had so many diabetics do this challenge and they all lose weight and get significantly better. So in 8 weeks, if you give me a diabetic person, I can significantly improve their diabetes just by changing their diet and could even give them honey. But in this trial, none of that happened. They did not do an animal-based diet. They did not improve the quality of the diet. All they did was give them honey in significant amounts. And what happened? They got more insulin sensitive. They didn't get less insulin sensitive. They became more insulin sensitive. So you can see here in the honey group, also lost weight. They started at 71.3 kilograms, plus or minus 12.7, and they ended the trial at 69.5 kilograms. That's basically 2 kilograms in 8 weeks. So about 4 pounds, a little more than 4.5 pounds over 8 weeks. And all they did was give them more honey. They lost weight. The control group did not lose any weight, the exact same weight at the beginning. So the honey group lost weight. That was statistically significant. The honey group reduced the fasting blood sugar from 153 milligrams per deciliter to 124. The standard deviations here are 43.9 and 37.5 respectively. But the honey group lowered their fasting blood sugar. That is the most important metric that this study did. I would have loved to have seen their fasting insulin. But if your fasting blood sugar is going down from 153 to 124, you're technically not even diabetic anymore. Obviously, a fasting blood sugar of 124 is way too high. But these people would now be considered pre-diabetic at 8 weeks by giving them 175 grams of honey per day, right? The control group, 135 milligrams per deciliter, 131.9 at the end of the study. So that I think is fascinating. Now, let's talk about the blood sugar. If you give any human 175 grams of honey per day, their blood sugar is going to go up, which means you're going to see a hemoglobin A1C go up. You're going to see an increase in average blood sugar over the course of 90 days, which is what hemoglobin A1C measures. If you're curious about hemoglobin A1C and whether this measures fructose, see the previous video I did on my YouTube channel about the hidden dangers of a ketogenic diet and how hemoglobin A1C definitely measures fructose glycation, and there's no real concern. If you're worried about eating fruit and honey and having this glycate your cells, you will see it in the hemoglobin A1C. It's not hidden. There are no dangers of eating fruit and honey. In that video, I talk about hidden dangers of eating a ketogenic diet, which I'll talk about in a future podcast. But if you want the preview, you should look up a molecule called methylglyoxal, which is a problematic advanced glycation end product that goes up significantly on a ketogenic diet, probably because the glycerol backbone of triglycerides, which are increased from increased lipolysis on a ketogenic diet, forms methylglyoxal. Not a good thing. Back to this study. Hemoglobin A1C went up from 7.1 to 7.7 in the honey group. Not surprising. You give people more honey, their blood sugar is going to go up. But their insulin sensitivity got better. Their fasting blood glucose went down. I think that if you'd made other changes in these people's diets, they would have improved the hemoglobin A1C. And over time, that hemoglobin A1C is going to come down because there's no way that somebody who's getting more insulin sensitive is going to have a rising hemoglobin A1C long-term. I think it might peak out at 7.7 or a little higher, and it's going to come down as it catches up because they're just going to keep getting more insulin sensitive if you change the diet. Imagine what would have happened if we removed the seed oils from these people's diets. Now, interestingly, the control group went from 7.1 to 7.3. So even the control group increased their hemoglobin A1C. If you want to know the average blood sugar conversions, 7.1, which is where both groups started, is about 157 milligrams per deciliter. At the end of the study, the control group was at 163 average blood sugar, and the honey group was at 174. So giving people 175 grams of honey for the last 2 weeks, and then I outlined how much honey they got before that, only increased the average blood sugar 11 milligrams per deciliter, and the fasting blood sugar went down, they lost weight, they got more insulin sensitive, and their lipids got better as well. So all the metrics got better, and the hemoglobin A1C went up because their blood sugar went up. We know this is going to happen. You can see here on these blood work results, the triglycerides went from 190 to 148 in the honey group. The HDL went from 59 to 66. The LDL went from 125 to 107. So all of these metrics got better in the honey group in diabetics. So I think this flies in the face of the convention that sugar is horrible for diabetics, that honey is horrible for diabetics. You should never do this. If you're completely myopic and you only think about your blood sugar, which misses, in fact, the actual pathology, the roots of diabetes, you might see that as a problem. But if you're looking at the causative things here, if you're looking at the insulin sensitivity, fasting blood sugar, lipids as an indicator of insulin sensitivity, you'll see very clearly that giving honey to diabetics actually made them less insulin resistant, caused them to lose weight, lipids improved, and improved their health overall. And again, this is all part of a broader conversation about why I don't think even diabetics should be consuming artificial sweeteners. And I haven't even shown you guys the bad things about artificial sweeteners. I'm just showing you guys a little bit of evidence that honey as an indicator, as a model substance of a simple source of sugars for healthy people or diabetics, is probably good for all of us. Now, the amount of honey is going to vary based on your activity level. Do you need to eat 300 grams of carbohydrates per day like me? No. On the Carnivore MD website, we put an animal-based calculator there. It's free. You can see it's kind of broad strokes, but you don't need that many carbohydrates if you're not exercising like crazy. I'm surfing a couple hours a day. But having some carbohydrates in your life from sources like fruit, from honey, from raw dairy, which has lactose, from maple syrup, this will improve your electrolyte maintenance. It will improve your thyroid function. It will improve your sex hormone function. It will improve your sleep. And it will prevent the accumulation of things like methylglyoxal and other advanced glycation end products. And so the other question I get here, which is a little bit of an aside, but I want to address it, is people in ketogenic and carnivore communities saying, I can't eat sugar. I feel crazy when I eat sugar. Well, guess what, guys? If you've been doing keto or carnivore for weeks to months, I did it for 18 months. I know what this is like. You are very physiologically insulin resistant. Yes, I said it. You are insulin resistant. It's different than a seed oil induced insulin resistance, but your body doesn't know what the heck to do with glucose if you give it to your body. Now, your body's pretty smart. You give your body glucose in the form of honey or fruit, maybe titrating up gradually over a few days, your body will respond. Your GLUT4 will go into the cell membranes. Your body will be able to process that glucose in about 72 hours. But if you don't have any significant amount of carbohydrates in your diet, of course your blood sugar is going to go up when you try and eat it. That doesn't mean it's bad for you. It means you've become physiologically insulin resistant and you've put yourself in a bad spot. Frankly, I'm speaking to you guys. Your thyroid is low, your T3 is low, your testosterone is going to be low, your sleep is going to be messed up, your electrolytes. A lot of people will say this to me, like, I can't do it, I gain weight. Well, that's probably because your T3 is super low from doing keto for a long time. So I'm going to do a podcast on how to recover from a ketogenic diet in a few weeks. But respectfully, guys, this is what I wanted to share with you in hopes that it will be helpful, and say that if you've been doing keto or carnivore for a long time, you are physiologically insulin resistant. Having carbohydrates in your carnivore diet, which is something that should be known as animal-based in my opinion, but people are now eating fruit and honey on carnivore, which I think is freaking great. I love that the definition of carnivore is expanding and we're not being dogmatic there. There's no real way to expand a ketogenic definition, although we could call it keto plus fruit if you want. I think you guys are going to be great on keto plus F. Should be the new thing. Keto plus fruit, right? Which is basically animal-based. That is going to be much better for you long-term. And there may be some bumps along the way. If many of you remember when you started a ketogenic diet or a carnivore diet, going into ketosis, becoming keto-adapted takes some transition of your metabolic machinery. Getting out of it is going to take some transition again. You're going to have to rebuild all of the metabolic machinery that does glycolysis, that moves pyruvate through the Krebs cycle that you've been ignoring significantly by doing mostly beta oxidation and high levels of lipolysis. So this is just to say, stay tuned for the How to Recover from a Ketogenic Diet podcast, and that will be coming soon. But for most of you, I want you to understand that artificial sweeteners have no place in your diet. Glucose is not your enemy, it's your friend. Even diabetics, as I said, can do fine with glucose. Consider one more study here, and then I'm going to move on to some of the benefits of carbohydrates. It's an interesting study talking about the relevance of glycemic index and glycemic load for body weight, diabetes, and cardiovascular disease. For those who aren't familiar, glycemic index and glycemic load are metrics of how much the blood sugar moves up after you eat a meal. Either you're adjusting for the amount of the meal or the amount of carbohydrates or the amount of grams of food you're eating, or you're just looking at how much your blood sugar moves after you eat a certain amount of a certain food. But as you'll see in this study, and you can read the whole thing, the strongest intervention studies typically find little relationship among glycemic index and glycemic response, which is their synonym for glycemic load, and physiologic measures of disease risk. Even for observational studies, the relationship between GI and GR and disease outcomes is limited. And this is me showing you evidence that if your blood sugar goes up, an increase in glycemic index, a higher glycemic load food, there's not a lot of good evidence in the interventional studies that that's a big problem. Is it a problem if that's an indicator of insulin resistance? Yes, but by itself, having a glucose that goes up after you eat food that contains carbohydrates that are easily digestible has not been associated in interventional or observational trials with increased disease outcomes. Okay, this is where you cue the head exploding. This is the garbage pail kid. This is atom bomb head exploding. Let me repeat that for you. If you are eating a food that has sugar in it, fruit, honey, maple syrup, milk, and your blood sugar goes up, there's not good evidence from observation or interventional studies that that is harmful for you. If you are insulin resistant and your blood sugar is going up because your liver is doing inappropriate gluconeogenesis, that is harmful for humans. Blood sugar that elevates or rises after you eat carbohydrates doesn't look to be harmful for humans. I know many of you guys don't believe me, but I think some of you have broken through this barrier, have seen through the veil. But look at read those two studies that I just showed you if you have questions about this. I'm going to move on to talking about benefits of carbohydrates in athletes and benefits of carbohydrates from a hormonal perspective. Then I'm going to talk about the artificial sweeteners and why you don't want them in your diet. But I'm saying this because I think that many of you out there would benefit from reincorporating carbohydrates in your diet. Again, I'm really looking forward to doing the How to Recover from Keto podcast really soon because I think that it's very needed. So I want to make a quick case for including carbohydrates in your diet from the positive side. The first part of the podcast, I talked about why even people with diabetes may include things like honey and hopefully a diet that is excluding seed oils and high fructose corn syrup, obviously, improving the quality of the diet. But there's some really interesting research. At first, I'm going to talk about exercise-induced exertion and benefits of carbohydrates, which I think are reflective of benefits of carbohydrates for us in general. And I'm going to talk about how carbohydrate deprivation looks like it has pretty negative effects on the thyroid, which is not a good thing for humans. So the first article that I want to bring up is this one, the influence of dietary carbohydrates on the free testosterone to cortisol ratio responses to short-term intensive exercise training. So I wish more people did this free testosterone to cortisol ratio on their blood work. You probably have to do it a couple of different times per day, but show me your free testosterone to cortisol ratio, and I will tell you if you are 1, overtrained, and 2, undercarbohydrated, undercarbed. And if your hormones are tanked, cortisol is too high, your free testosterone is too low because of a number of issues in the human body. So the results of the study were quite clear. They looked at either 60% of calories as carbohydrates, and I know that's a lot, but I'll address it in a moment, or a low carbohydrate diet with 30% of calories as carbohydrates. They didn't have a keto group in this study, so I can't say what would have happened with keto, but I suspect really strongly that if you had lower than 30% of your diet as carbohydrates, that is even going to look worse from a free testosterone to cortisol ratio perspective. But the study clearly showed that the free testosterone to cortisol ratio decreased significantly. The p-value was less than 0.01 from the pre-study resting measurement to the final study resting measurement in the low carbohydrate group. And it was around 43% that the ratio declined. There's no change in the control carbohydrate group of 60% of the calories as carbohydrates. Now, when I look at my chronometer, and I put a video on YouTube recently about my diet in terms of the carbohydrates and the percentages, I'm more than 30% of my calories from carbohydrates. I think I'm probably 40 to 50 a lot of days. But 60 is something that I'll have to experiment with. That's a lot of carbohydrates from fruit and honey, but studies like this pretty consistently suggest that at least in people like myself who are going to do short-term intensive exercise, and I haven't quite decided if I believe surfing for 2 hours a day is short-term intensive exercise. It's paddle for a wave, you jump on the wave, you get smashed, you hold your breath, you come up, and you languidly paddle back to the lineup unless there's a huge set coming and you have to fight for your life. So sometimes when I'm surfing, it's pretty intense, and sometimes when I'm surfing, it's pretty mellow. It's not like I'm running 2 hours a day. I used to do that. It's nothing like that. You paddle back from the lineup and you sit in the lineup and talk to your friends and look at rainbows and the sky, and maybe there's a whale out there or some dolphins swimming by, or maybe you get stung by a stingray, hopefully not a stingray, maybe a jellyfish, or you're just hanging out. So a lot of time when I'm surfing is mellow with some sprints in there from the paddling and then standing and then trying to make turns and pump on a wave. So those who have surfed will understand what that sort of exertion is like, but it's a little bit like walking or sitting and then getting up every 4 to 10 minutes and doing a few air squats or jump squats. And then you sit back down, you do it again. So who knows? I think it's more exercise than an average walk around the block, but it's not as intense as 2 hours of straight running. So probably more carbohydrates would be beneficial for me. It's something I want to experiment with. For my diet of 3,000-ish calories a day, when I do my chronometer, if you saw the previous podcast with chronometer or the shorter YouTube video with chronometer, I'm above 3,000 calories mostly every single day. So if I'm looking for 60% of my calories as carbohydrates, I'm looking at 450 grams of carbohydrates a day, which is quite a lot. I think a lot of days I'm getting more than 300 now, 350, but I want to experiment with even more based on studies like this. The point of this study that I'm showing you is to illustrate the fact that in many studies like this, the higher carbohydrate group, which is usually around 55 or 60% carbohydrates, fares better than the low carb group, which they usually put at about 30% of their calories from carbohydrates. So again, this is mostly looking at intense exercise, but I think in a lot of us, this could be helpful even if we're not doing crazy amounts of exercise. Maybe we don't have to go all the way to 60%, but I think increasing your carbohydrates is something to consider. Another study here, modification of the immune response to exercise by carbohydrate, glutamine, antioxidant supplements. I don't really want to go down the rabbit hole with glutamine antioxidants. I just want to focus on the carbohydrates. But you can see here in the abstract, they say consuming carbohydrates during exercise attenuates rise in stress hormones such as cortisol, appears to limit the degree of exercise-induced immunosuppression. That can't be a good thing, at least for non-fatiguing bouts of exercise. If you scroll down in the paper, you can actually see the points where they are looking at the cortisol levels. This one is plasma cortisol. The black dots are the carbohydrate group. The open dots are the no carbohydrate group, which clearly at 0 hours after exercise and then 1 hour post-exercise and 2 hour post-exercise has pretty significant elevations of cortisol. Having post-exercise cortisol elevated is not a good thing. You can see here plasma IL-1 interleukin 1 is much higher when you don't feed carbohydrates during exercise or before exercise. Neutrophil lymphocyte ratio, significantly higher in people who are not getting carbohydrates. Plasma IL-6 stays elevated for longer in people who are not getting carbohydrates during and around exercise. So again, just another illustration that carbohydrates are beneficial. Most of us should be doing some sort of exercise. The last one I want to show here is isocaloric carbohydrate deprivation. So same amount of calories. Carbohydrate deprivation induces protein catabolism. That's digestion of muscle, guys, despite a low T3 syndrome in healthy men. So even though it says it's despite a low T3 syndrome, they say T3 values were significantly lower in carbohydrate deprivation diets. And these people used 85, 44, and 2% carbohydrates, but only the 2% carbohydrate group showed decreased T3. The 44% carbohydrate group did okay. I don't know how anyone could get 85% of their calories as carbohydrates. That doesn't leave much room for meat or organs or any animal fats, which I think are valuable as well. But nevertheless, 44, I think, is a totally attainable percentage of carbohydrates in your macros, maybe something to experiment with. T3 values went down, reverse T3 went up, T3 uptake and free T4 labels increased simultaneously, meaning that T4 is not getting converted to T3, it's getting converted to reverse T3, which is not where you want it. And urinary nitrogen excretion suggesting muscle protein breakdown increased significantly in the low carbohydrate group. So pretty gnarly finding there, guys. I don't know why I ever avoided carbs for so long, and I don't know why many of you continue to avoid carbohydrates, but the point there is that carbohydrates appear to be very beneficial from an immune perspective, from a muscle breakdown perspective, from a thyroid perspective, and from a post-exercise cortisol perspective, free testosterone to cortisol perspective, all those things, benefits of carbohydrates in the diet. Now, a couple of quick things about methylglyoxal. I spoke about this in my Hidden Dangers of a Ketogenic Diet video. Oxidative stress and aging, is methylglyoxal the hidden enemy? You guys can read that sort of review paper about methylglyoxal, a highly reactive dicarbonyl metabolite, which appears to be quite harmful for humans. The most impressive paper I've seen here, or the most striking paper, is this one, which is titled Ketosis Leads to Increased Methylglyoxal Production on the Atkins Diet. And you can see here that on the zero carb or very low carb version of ketosis, methylglyoxal increased 2.12-fold, over 100% increase in methylglyoxal, which again is a harmful advanced glycation end product derived from the glycerol backbone of triglycerides, which are increased in the blood from increased lipolysis, increased non-esterified fatty acids when you're in ketosis. That increased over twofold on ketosis. So again, I think there's a lot of benefit to having carbohydrates in your diet. This is a podcast about artificial sweeteners, and I want to spend the rest of the podcast talking about them and why I'm not a fan of them. But I did feel like I should make a case for why you shouldn't be using artificial sweeteners, because you shouldn't be fearing honey, maple syrup, fruit, lactose, and milk in your life. I'm trying to think of ways that people use artificial sweeteners. They're consuming them in either decreased calorie foods, which are usually highly processed. They're getting a reduced sugar soda. I found some Coca-Cola at the grocery store here, which says reduced sugar, and it has sucralose in it, which, as you'll find, when you have sucralose, as I'll speak about in a moment, when you have sucralose presented with carbohydrates, the body's response to insulin and glucose tolerance goes completely haywire. It's a very damaging thing for humans that I think is really important that very few people are talking about. So that's a real problem. And reduced calorie Coke has that. Reduced calorie cranberry juice has it. Protein powders have sucralose and carbohydrates. You find it in a lot of things like English muffins. The thing is that these artificial sweeteners have no calories, so it's not going to show up on the label, and they're sweeter than sugar. Ace K, which is acesulfame K, is 200 times sweeter than sucrose. So they can add a small amount of it to a food and make it much sweeter with not increasing the calories or the carbohydrates, but it's going to be a problem for you, and I'll talk about why in a moment. So these artificial sweeteners are insidious. They're not helping your diabetes. They're worsening your diabetes. They're messing up your gut flora, and they're worsening your immune response and your insulin response to these foods. So important to consider all those aspects of these artificial sweeteners. And these artificial sweeteners are things like saccharin, ACE-K, which is acesulfame K, aspartame, and sucralose, and also stevia. So again, before I dive into this, I just don't understand why people are consuming foods with these things in them. I don't think they're good for humans in any way, shape, or form. Even stevia, and I'll show you an article that suggested it's a problem as well in a moment. But I know there are some electrolyte mixes that have stevia as a component to make that sweet with the electrolytes, but they don't want to put sugar in the electrolytes because people are probably using these electrolytes for keto because they don't have a postprandial insulin response and their electrolytes are all messed up. The simple solution is just to eat more carbohydrates, guys. And then your body will retain salt and it'll retain the sodium, the chloride, the magnesium, the potassium. All of it will work just fine if you get that postprandial insulin signal. I've spoken about that in the past. So stevia can be in those sorts of things. Stevia can be in quote unquote healthy foods. Stevia is in a lot of these keto healthy junk foods, quote unquote. I'm making air quotes. Again, I don't think any of this is good food for humans. The other ones, sucralose, aspartame, ACE-K are in things like Coke, Coke Zero, Diet Coke. They're in all sorts of highly processed foods that I hope most of you are avoiding, but maybe you're trying to do the right thing. Maybe you're diabetic or you're obese and you're trying to lose weight by cutting calories. Refer to the videos I've done on how to lose weight, which don't include cutting calories. But in fact, I would urge you to focus on improving your food quality. So again, I don't know why people are eating artificial sweeteners, but I want to make the strong case that there is no reason to do this. Not even if you're diabetic, there's no reason to have artificial sweeteners in your diet, not even stevia. So let's dive into research suggesting that these things are harmful for humans. I want to start with stevia, then I will go straight to sucralose. And I think that is perhaps the most interesting article on sucralose. But I think stevia is probably the one that most of you guys are eating, believing it's benign. But I would recommend that you consider articles like this, anti-quorum sensing activity of stevia extracts, steviocide, rebucide, rebaudioside A, it's also called Reb-A, and their A-glycan steviol. So all the stevia extracts and all these Reb-A things, it has an anti-quorum sensing activity as clearly shown in this paper from 2020. What is quorum sensing? Quorum sensing is all the bacteria in your gut text messaging each other, which is a good thing. So the problem is that stevia and most of these artificial sweeteners, there's another paper I will show you from Nature looking at saccharin, ACE-K, aspartame, and sucralose are all disrupting the gut flora. They're disrupting the way the gut flora communicates with each other, which leads to imbalances in levels of different gut flora. And in this paper, they didn't look at glucose intolerance in people who are eating stevia, but they did look at quorum sensing, which is the way that bacteria in your gut communicate. But in other papers, in both mice and humans, they show that these other artificial sweeteners, in the Nature paper I will show you, they did not look at stevia, will cause glucose intolerance, worsening of your insulin sensitivity, by disrupting the gut flora. There's other mechanisms in the sucralose paper, which I will show you in a moment as well. But I'll read from the abstract. In general, regulation of microbial behavior is known to depend highly on signaling molecules via quorum sensing pathways. This is also true for the gut microbial community. We therefore evaluated the possible role of these stevia-based natural, quote-unquote, sweeteners on this bacterial communication pathway. Purified stevia extracts, including steviacide, Reb A, and steviol, revealed a molecular interaction, possible interruption of gram-negative bacterial communication via either the LASR or RH1R receptor. Our in silico analysis suggests a competitive type inhibitory role for steviol, while Reb I and steviacide likely to inhibit LASR-mediated quorum sensing in a non-competitive manner. The results suggest the need for further safety studies on the agents. Yeah, I would say so. This is from 2020, and stevia is in so many foods, guys. And the potential that this stevia, which certainly appears to be the most, quote, air quotes, benign of any of these, but I still wouldn't eat it, and I do not eat it at all, is going to disrupt quorum sensing communication between the bacteria in your gut. That's not a good thing. You don't want that happening. It's going to cause imbalance in the gut flora. This, I think, is something we will begin to understand more as we move on, but I would avoid anything with stevia in it for these reasons. I just don't think there's any reason to consume foods that have stevia in them. These are all processed in some way, even if they're labeled as keto or low carb. I would urge you guys, don't fear the carbohydrates. I used to, and I've tried to not be ossified, calcified, and just continue to learn. But that doesn't do well when you're part of dogmatic communities who then turn on you, as we know. But anyway, let's move on to a really interesting paper about sucralose. So sucralose is Splenda. And in any average grocery store, there are over 3,000 products with Splenda and carbohydrates in them. And as you'll see in this paper, when they gave Splenda sweetened drinks to humans, Splenda by itself did not seem to cause problems for insulin sensitivity. But Splenda plus carbohydrates created major problems. In fact, in this study by Dana Small, who's the lead author at, I believe she's at Yale and another Northeastern University, she's a psychologist, they actually had to terminate the trial in adolescents early because there was such profound insulin sensitivity dysregulation in the study. So this is really worth reading, guys. This study is incredible and really scary for any of you eating anything with sucralose and carbohydrates in it. This is all quorum sensing, all gut disruption aside. At the level of the brain and vagal signaling to the brain from the gut, sucralose plus carbohydrates appears to cause all sorts of problems with carbohydrate tolerance, glucose tolerance. This is why diabetics especially should not be eating artificial sweeteners. Title of this paper, Short-Term Consumption of Sucralose with but not without Carbohydrate Impairs Neural and Metabolic Sensitivity to Sugar in Humans. That right there is all you need to know. How many of you only eat Splenda by itself, ever? You never have any sort of artificial sweetener containing beverage or any of these artificial sweeteners with anything that has carbohydrates. It almost never happens. So you are consuming, if you're consuming artificial sweeteners, you are consuming their aspartame, ACE-K, saccharin, or sucralose with carbohydrates. And though this paper is just with sucralose, I have concerns that the same thing may be happening with all the other artificial sweeteners, at least from that class that I mentioned, because of the way that it creates a mismatch in your body. There is neural signaling at the level of the gut that says, this is sweet, but the amount of carbohydrates or the amount of nutrients, this being calories from the sugars, are not lining up, and that causes your body to go haywire. It's almost like you're giving the car the wrong type of gas, in my opinion. This is the analogy I would suggest here. You have a diesel car, you don't put unleaded fuel into the diesel car. You don't put diesel fuel into your unleaded car. You don't put water into your gas tank. You don't put alcohol into your gas tank. And I have a car that has AdBlue fluid, so it has this emissions controlling fluid, and I learned the hard way that if I don't watch people at the gas station, they will put diesel in the AdBlue fluid, and that caused me to have to redo the whole AdBlue pump and everything. But this is what's happening to, I think, the body when you're eating things like artificial sweeteners with carbohydrates, which happens the majority of the time for us, let's be honest, for us as humans. You're giving the car the wrong type of fuel, it confuses the car, and it's changing the way your body responds to glucose, and your insulin sensitivity is damaged, and you become intolerant to glucose. It should be noted in this study that this was 2 weeks And over those 2 weeks, the sucralose plus carbohydrates drink was given 7 times over 2 weeks. It's not even every day. So you can see here the results in terms of the insulin sensitivity in the sucralose plus carbohydrates group. And this, I believe, is the change in fasting insulin in adolescents. And as you can see here, the pre versus post was really out of line. That's caused them to stop the experiment in adolescents because the fasting insulin went absolutely haywire in these adolescents who were drinking sucralose with carbohydrates. So this experiment, this set of experiments is really scary for anyone eating sucralose or artificial sweeteners with carbohydrates. Do not let your children do this. This is a problem for humans. Again, I don't see any reason to have these artificial sweeteners in your diet. So that was sucralose. I want to talk a little bit about aspartame. This study is in animals, but it is really scary. So the title is Transgenerational Transmission of Aspartame-Induced Anxiety and Changes in the Glutamate GABA Signaling and Gene Expression in the Amygdala. Transgenerational transmission. So in these C57BL6 mice, which are a common mouse used in these experiments, giving aspartame at doses that were a fraction, 8 to 15% of the FDA recommended maximum human daily intake equivalents, induced anxiety behaviors, which were passed on to their offspring. You can see here in the abstract, even more strikingly, the anxiety-like behavior in response, its response to diazepam and changes in the amygdala gene expression were transmitted to male and female offspring in 2 generations descending from the aspartame-exposed males. Men, if you are eating aspartame, I don't think we know this for sure, but this is scary about the effects in all levels of the body being transmitted to your offspring. Extrapolation of the findings to humans suggests that aspartame consumption at doses below the FDA recommended maximum daily intake may produce neurobehavioral changes in aspartame-consuming individuals and their descendants. That's really scary. Again, why in the world are we consuming these foods? As they say here today, aspartame is found in nearly 5,000 food products consumed by men, women, pregnant women, and children. Its annual production is 3,000 to 5,000 metric tons worldwide. Unreal. Unreal. FDA recommended maximum daily uptake is 50 milligrams per kilogram. Again, in these mice, they used 8 to 15% of the FDA recommended maximum equivalents in the animals. So they were using really small doses of aspartame in these mice, seeing anxiety-like behaviors that were extinguished with diazepam, which is a benzodiazepine, seeing them pass on to their offspring of males, seeing changes in the brain, the amygdala specifically. This is a problem. You should not be eating foods with aspartame. What foods have aspartame? Oh, I don't know, like Diet Coke. So I'm going to do a reel about this on Instagram, but what's the difference between Coke Zero and Diet Coke? Both of them contain aspartame, but I believe Coke Zero has Ace K plus aspartame. So Coke Zero has Ace K, Aspartame K, which I'm going to talk about in a moment, and Diet Coke just has aspartame. So if you're drinking Diet Coke, this does not bode well for your offspring if you're a male or even transgenerational. Potentially, this is a problem for females as well. Is it inducing anxiety behaviors in females that can be passed on to offspring? We don't know fully, but this is pretty striking. Again, we haven't talked about the gut disrupting effects. And as I tried to say at the beginning of the podcast, why not just sweeten your foods with things like honey, maple syrup, or fruit juice, preferably an organic fruit juice, whatever you want to do. But I think that most of you would understand that Diet Coke is not benign. I want to make very clear that energy drinks with these artificial sweeteners are not benign. The diet Red Bulls, the sugar-free Monsters, all these energy drinks are problematic because they're containing these artificial sweeteners. So there are things in our diets that many of you may be using to go to the gym, et cetera, that are problematic from both a gut perspective, from a glucose intolerance perspective, from an insulin resistance perspective, which is really a synonym for what I just mentioned, from an anxiety perspective, changes in the brain, potentially heritable 2 generations in mice. And again, sucralose plus carbohydrates creating massive problems in humans, according to Dana's small study. So what are we doing? What are we doing? Somewhat similarly to the study with aspartame, here's a study from 2013 showing long-term artificial sweetener ACE-K, acesulfame potassium treatment alters neurometabolic functions in the C57BL6J mice, which is the same mice that were used in the previous study. And they're saying the same things. It doesn't look good to be using these sweeteners for significant amounts of time, whether you're a mouse or a human. One more here. This is a pretty interesting paper from Nature from 2014. The title is Artificial Sweeteners Induce Glucose Intolerance by Altering the Gut Microbiota. So this paper isn't necessarily talking about the quorum sensing. It's talking about changes in the gut microbiota. You can see here in the abstract, non-caloric artificial sweeteners are among the most widely used food additives worldwide. That bums me out. Regularly consumed by lean and obese individuals alike. They're considered safe and beneficial owing to their low caloric content. Not the whole story. Yet supporting and scientific data remains sparse and controversial. Here we demonstrate the consumption of commonly used non-caloric artificial sweeteners. They focus mostly on saccharin, but they use aspartame and ACE-K as well as sucralose. Drives the development of glucose intolerance through the induction of compositional and functional alterations in the intestinal microbiome. This paper is in Nature, guys, not a Slack type of journal. They do have some data in humans in this paper, but most of it is in mice. But there is, like I said, some data in humans in here too. So whether you're talking about gut flora alterations, whether you're talking about quorum sensing, whether you're talking about insulin resistance in the combination of sucralose plus carbohydrates, whether you're talking about stevia, whether you're talking about aspartame, whether you're talking about ACE-K, whether you're talking about sucralose, whether you're talking about saccharin, there is no place in the human diet for artificial sweeteners. And corollary to that, there are no harms to eating non-processed forms of sugars. Should you be eating high fructose corn syrup? Absolutely not. I'll do a whole podcast on that in a couple of weeks about the differences in high fructose corn syrup versus other types of sugars, as Georgie hinted at in the first podcast that we did. High fructose corn syrup, if you look at MS and GC spec, has 4 to 5 times the amount of calories you'd expect. So there's something going on there. And like I said at the beginning of this podcast, I think that's why so many people believe it to be harmful and why some studies don't look great. So yeah, Robert Lustig has done studies where you remove fructose-containing soft drinks and foods from kids and they get more insulin sensitive. But how many of those foods are high fructose corn syrup-containing foods? We're not removing fruit from these kids. Unfortunately, these are inner city kids and they're mostly eating processed foods. So we must not conflate research that's looking at high fructose corn syrup, which we know to be a different entity than sucrose, especially sucrose found in things like fruit, honey, maple syrup, milk, that kind of thing. If you don't believe that artificial sweetener consumption is a problem for most humans, consider this paper from eatright.org. I'll have a side comment about eatright.org in a moment, but the consumption of low-calorie sweetener among children and adults in the United States, 25.1% of children, which is crazy, and 41.4% of adults was reported consuming artificial sweeteners. This is from 2009 to 2012. I'm going to go out on a limb and say that's much higher now. Most artificial sweetener consumers reported use once daily, and the frequency of consumption increased with body weight in adults. So obese individuals trying to lose weight and sabotaging the gut microbiome, insulin sensitivity, all these things. This is the problem, guys. If you're wondering why you can't lose weight and you've got a Diet Coke in your hand, I hope this podcast is shedding light on that incongruity right now. So my commentary about eatright.org is that this is the American Association of Nutrition and Dietetics. And I've done a reel, which I don't think I've posted. Probably when this podcast comes out, it will be posted on Instagram, that this organization is a little bit corrupt. Their reporting on low-calorie sweeteners among children and adults in the United States is great here, but they've received millions of dollars in funding from Pepsi, Hershey, Coca-Cola, other large processed food manufacturers. So the main organization behind eatright.org, the American Association of Dietetics and Nutritionists, who train hundreds of thousands of dietitians and nutritionists a year, and then are responsible for many hundreds of thousands of touch points with patients, are receiving millions of dollars in funding from processed food companies. So you should just know that about their recommendations. But this study, nonetheless, is a survey looking at artificial sweetener consumption. I just had to point out how I'm not a fan of eatright.org, but at least they're pointing out that artificial sweetener consumption is really high in most children and adults. In 2010, so 12 years ago, 10 to 12 years ago, it's definitely higher now. So where have we gone in this podcast? I started out the podcast by talking about the fact that I don't believe there's any reason to be using artificial sweeteners in your diet, especially if you're diabetic. You do not want the glucose intolerance promoting effects of these artificial sweeteners in your diet, in your life. Get them out of your life. If you want a sweet drink, add a little bit of honey. In the paper I showed you guys in the beginning, at the end of the study, they were eating 175 grams of honey for 2 weeks. If you want some honey in your milk at night, if you want some honey on your burger, if you want some honey in your tea, add honey. Eat some fruit. I think it will benefit you. I talked about how diabetics don't do worse with honey. They actually do better. Yes, blood sugars go up. Hemoglobin A1C goes up. Remember that the main metric in diabetes is your insulin sensitivity, and that is improving along with lipids. And I think the long term, that A1C will come just down gradually as your body learns to handle that glucose. So don't fear carbohydrates if you're diabetic. Don't fear carbohydrates if you're obese. Don't fear carbohydrates if you're keto. Recovery from Keto podcast coming really soon for you guys, because I know that many of you will have questions on that after this one. Please go back and listen to the podcast I did with Georgi Dinkov. If you have more questions about that stuff or you want a deeper dive, stay tuned. He's coming back on in a few weeks. We're going to be talking about all kinds of good stuff. And then I talked about the artificial sweeteners. I showed you a study with sucralose in combination with carbohydrates, significantly disordering insulin sensitivity and glucose tolerance in humans, aspartame in mice leading to anxiety-like behaviors, saccharin leading to glucose intolerance via disruption of the gut microbiome in both humans and mice, ACE-K leading to changes neurometabolically in mice, and stevia leading to disruption of quorum sensing in the paper that I showed you first regarding stevia. So why are you eating stevia-containing foods? Why are you eating aspartame-containing foods? Why are you eating ACE-K-containing foods, saccharin, sucralose? I do not believe these are benign for humans, and I think that you will be significantly healthier by completely eliminating them from your diet. What do you put in their place? Put carbohydrates. You'll get improved exercise performance. Your thyroid will get better. Your electrolytes will get better. So many of you guys will see improved health when you add sources of carbohydrates back to your diet. I know that many of you may have seen temporary benefits from a ketogenic or carnivore diet. That doesn't mean you're going to lose those benefits, but getting back to carbohydrates, I think, will help in the long term. The transition may be a little rocky, but I am very confident that you will feel much better in the long term. And I know there will be comments substantiating that fact. I see it every day on Instagram. I see it all the time on the YouTube comments. People say, I added fruit and I felt better. I see a lot of YouTube comments, people saying, I'm adding fruit. I feel like my blood sugars are going high. Stick with it. You'll be fine. You're not going to get insulin resistant. In fact, you're going to improve your physiologic insulin resistance. You're going to be much more metabolically flexible. You're going to feel better in the long run, guys. Trust me, you do not want to be keto long-term. This is a state of physiologic insulin resistance. It's not a great thing. I would love to do more productive discussions with people from the keto community and highlight the problems of the ketogenic diet. Hopefully we'll make some of that stuff happen in the near future. So if you really want to make changes to your diet, getting rid of artificial sweeteners is a great thing to do. Doing a full dietary reset is even better. And that's why I want to let you know that Animal Base 30 is going on right now with Heart and Soil. You can go to animalbase30.com. It's free. There's a Facebook group. There are online Q&As. There's all kinds of resources there for you guys. It's just a free program to get you started in 2023 right with an animal-based diet. Join us. This podcast will probably be out mid-January. It's not too late. You're about halfway through Animal Base 30. Still not too late to join us. Looking forward to seeing you guys there. If you guys are watching on YouTube, please put questions in the comments. I try to read them and get a sense of where we want to go on the next podcast, but hopefully this is helpful. Results over dogma, guys. Think, question everything I'm saying, question what you've been taught. The hope is that you will become curious and continue learning. Results over dogma.